I want to thank you all for coming out to our press conference here at Netflix. We have an exciting new show that is going to be coming out this week called Dear White People. Now, I know what you're thinking, controversial name, but guess what, guys? This is going to be amazing. I know in the heat of all this controversy in regard to Black Lives Matter and black versus white and all the race relations, those issues that we're experiencing in America, it's more important now than ever to uplift black voices. And that's what we're going to do with this Dear White People show. We are going to address the black voices, elevate them, and truly talk about the black experience in America. Now, I'm going to leave somebody else to it. I'm going to have our showrunner come and talk about this show. Let me pass it over to him.
Yes. Thank you very much. We're very excited about this new show. You know, white people have just had the stage for far too long. They've been pulling the strings and controlling everything. They've been behind everything and just been able to get their voice heard. And it's time to allow black voices to step in and black perspectives to be heard and put a spotlight on the black experience. And that's why I made this show for the elevation of the black perspective.
Absolutely. I love when white people run shows that are meant to elevate black voices. This is amazing, guys. Guys, give it up. Nobody's clapping. And scene, ladies and gentlemen. Now, let's get into these stories here. There's so much that has happened that has created these tensions and these problems. We're going to get to the Dear White People story. But before we do that, we have to talk about a one Mr. Dave Chappelle. He put out a new Netflix special, the last of his series on Netflix called The Closer. And this Netflix special has caused so much heat, a ridiculous amount of heat, in particular in regard to transgender issues. So before we even get into talking about Dave Chappelle, my take on the special, Taylor's take on the special, and the response that it's gotten, let's hear from Dave Chappelle himself. Let's hear what he had to say. Here's the clip.
Now, I shouldn't speak on this because I am not a woman, nor am I trans. But as we've established, I am a feminist. That's right. I'm Team Turf. I agree, man. Gender is a fact. You have to look at it from a woman's perspective. Look at it like this. Caitlyn Jenner, whom I've met, wonderful person. Caitlyn Jenner was voted Woman of the Year. Her first year as a woman. Ain't that something? Beat every bitch in Detroit, she's better than all of you. Gender is a fact. This is a fact. Every human being in this room, every human being on Earth, had to pass through the legs of a woman to be on Earth. That is a fact.
Woo! So controversial. Every single human being that is on this earth had to pass through the legs of a woman to be here. That is a fact.
Outrageous.
Outrageous. Outrageous. Now, I made a video about this on my Instagram, a more long-form video talking about Dave Chappelle's special and the outrage that is, you know, subsequently followed this getting out there. And I'll encourage you guys to go look at that. That's at The Amla Epinobi on Instagram. You can also follow Taylor at Taylor Trandall. You can follow Will at The Will Witt if you want to see additional content. But Dave Chappelle got so much heat for this special, and I was expecting it to be really bad because I've been hearing this story throughout the week. So I go to Netflix yesterday. I'm chilling, watching it with a friend. We watched the entire special, and I just didn't get it. Where's the outrage whatsoever? At some point, of course, he makes these comments about transgenderism and how gender is a fact, and he defends J.K. Rowling, and that's what everybody was going crazy about. But throughout the special, he affirms transgender people. He talks about a friend of his, a very dear friend, a transgender person who was a big part of his life and who subsequently died, and he gets into that in the story as well. But he talks about his love for trans people and about how everybody's going through a human experience and we should all accept that about people, even when they are confused. And he talks about his loved ones and his friends who he's met who are trans, yet we focus on these two little points in the show where he just affirms that gender is a fact.
Yeah, I mean, you can be a decent human being who can acknowledge that people with gender dysphoria have a tough time. You can sympathize with them. You can be friends with them. You can try to relate to them and understand their experience. But for the woke, it's not enough unless you subscribe to every little detail of their dogma and use all their language. And like, I think Andrew Sullivan wrote about this on Barry Weiss's Substack, but he made a point that like, if you treat marginalized communities as though they need to be shielded from being the butt of a joke ever, mm-hmm. then you're robbing them. You're treating them with kid gloves, and right. you're basically discriminating against them. It's this, sort of like the soft bigotry of low expectations we talk about. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, I know that you're too weak-minded to handle a joke if we made a joke about you. And Dave Chappelle obviously has no ill will towards trans people overall. He's just a funny comedian, and to any funny comedian, there's no one's off limits, and that's part of right. the joke. And so if you really want an inclusive society, then don't exclude anyone from being the butt of jokes, because that's what comedians are for.
Exactly right. And we talked about this on the show in the past, because comedians and comedy are constantly under fire. And there's something about good comedy. And we all know that Dave Chappelle is a great comedian. He's one of the goats when it comes to comedy across the board. It doesn't matter where you go, who you are. Dave Chappelle is one of the goats when it comes to comedy. And a key part of being a good comedian and doing good comedy is having respect for the people that you make fun of. That's why shows like SNL and Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel, they're not funny, because the people that they make fun of, they have absolutely no respect for. When Dave does this, and it's not just transgender people that he makes fun of, it's black people just like him. It's black men just like him. It's white people. It's gay people. It's white females. It's feminists. It doesn't matter. Everything is up for grabs when it comes to comedy. But he's good at it because, one, he understands those people, and he makes jokes that hit them where they understand it. And you realize, oh, well, this person in front of me, although they look different than me, they totally understand me, and that's hilarious. And also, he has respect for them, and that's a key part of it.
Yeah, and the net effect of, like, a healthy... when you have a culture that allows comedy, the net effect of allowing comedy is you have a healthier dynamic among the different people in the community that listen to it, because they're all able to sit in the same room together, black, white, gay, straight, whatever, and all hear jokes about each other. And everyone's like, yeah, that is kind of funny. That is the size mm-hmm. of the world that we live in. Isn't that funny? Aren't our differences real that we can, you know, acknowledge and laugh about? But when you don't allow certain things to be talked about, then like you said, it just shows a complete lack of respect for that group's ability to handle it. And I think about it like this, like, you know, the way when you think about like fraternities or just guys in general, when a new guy's introduced to a group, how do guys like relate to each other? You kind of start to tease a little bit, mm-hmm. and the way you like build, you earn respect in a group by proving that you can take a joke, right. by proving that you can, you know, be messed with a little bit but not get all snowflakey about it. And we're denying these marginal, quote unquote, marginalized groups the opportunity to really become a part of the group, because we're saying, oh, we can't ever say anything about them, we can't touch them, and that, you know, that deprives us of the ability to actually integrate them in a healthy way and have honest conversations and treat people with not being disingenuous and actually having honest conversations.
Yeah, it's really part of coming of age in America is to be made fun of regardless of who you are, and sort of go through that initiation into adulthood and emotional maturity. And to rob people of that and to say that they should be cushioned of that is wrong. And I said in the video that I posted on Instagram that I learned three things from really watching this special and thinking about the reaction to it. One, that comedy is dying in America. And that is truly tragic, because again, comedy is the last frontier, the final frontier of free speech. Once that's gone, I don't know what happens to free speech in general. Two, what I learned is that right now we're dealing with a population of people who are hypersensitive and also don't care about the First Amendment and freedom of speech. And when you have those two things, guess what? Those people are going to try to infringe upon your freedom of speech. And that's why they're trying to get this special taken off of Netflix, because they are hypersensitive, even though he makes fun of people from all walks of life, and they don't want to hear that. So they are going to step on people's free speech. And three, it's amazing to me that Anybody could watch this entire special, get all the way through it, and think that this man is a bigot. It amazes me, because as much as he makes fun of transgender people and all these other groups in this comedy special, he shows a deep compassion and understanding for what transgender people go through in America. And the fact that you can watch this entire hour and 12 minutes of a comedy special and completely gloss over the compassion and the love that he shows towards transgender people and only focus on those two comments shows a deeper part about human psychology here in America right now, that we don't care about the intent of jokes anymore, because intent is a really important thing. If I go out and shout hate speech at you with the intent of harming you, sure, that's horrible. That's not cool. That's not nice, although still protected by free speech. But if I go and I say something that offends you without the intent of doing so, that is a totally different ballgame. And now we're not taking that into account.
Amen. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I was reading the chat for a second.
No, you're fine. You're fine. So let's get into some of the backlash around this from one person in particular by the name of Jacqueline Moore. She's the showrunner for a show called Dear White People. You know, that show that we talked about in the beginning that is meant to elevate black voices. Now, here's the tweet out of Variety. Dear White People showrunner Jacqueline P. Moore announced Wednesday that she would be boycotting Netflix over Dave Chappelle's transphobic new special. She opened up to Variety's Mark Malcolm about why she's taking a stand against the dangerous rhetoric. So essentially, this person who runs a major show on Netflix called Dear White People is going to be boycotting Netflix until this special's taken down.
Boycotting your own company.
Yep.
That gave you a platform in the first place because you don't like something else that they did.
Right. And also, the fact that you showrun a show that is meant to elevate black voices, but you're boycotting Netflix because of a black voice said something that you don't like.
Oh, the pretzel logic. I'm just trying to untangle this and see who's what. Okay, what's the oppressed person I should be siding with? I'm so glad we just don't participate in these games at all, because It seems like such an intellectual labor to try to figure out, you know, who I should be siding with, who's oppressed, and which.
Exactly.
Okay, trans white person, female, is running a show about black voices. Are they the good guy, or do I side with the black guy because he's black and he is a black voice? But
and that's the danger of identity politics, ladies and gentlemen. That is the danger of it. So yeah, now we have a white trans woman who runs a show for elevating black voices coming after a black voice because she's accusing him of being transphobic in a special where he affirms trans people and talks about the love and understanding that he has for trans people. Amazing.
Clown world.
There's never been a better definition of a clown world.
Yeah, it just goes to show you, these people are not, like I said before, not really interested in achieving any sort of unity or people being able to relate to each other or actual diversity, diversity of thought, diversity of opinion, diversity of perspective. That is what Dave Chappelle's comedy is facilitating, is the ability of people to come together, relate to one another, understand one another, and to diffuse the tension that comes with life and coming from different backgrounds. And what they're doing is saying, unless you subscribe to our religion of identity politics and learn all the varying levels of oppression and preach all of the tenets of it and never step a toe out of line and say anything controversial about any of the groups that we're protecting and not deeming worthy or able to be the butt of a joke, then, you know, you're canceled.
Yep.
And effectively, and we're going to get into it next, I think, but Dave Chappelle last night is loving the canceled life, apparently.
Yes, let's get into this article. This is out of thedailycaller.com. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Chappelle spoke Thursday night to a sold-out audience at the Hollywood Bowl and told the crowd, if this is what being canceled is like, I love it. Good for him. Now, he goes on to say, F Twitter, F NBC News, ABC News, all these stupid-ass networks. I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you. This is real life.
Good for him. And it's so true. Like, the social media, mainstream media, what you see on there is a distortion of reality. It's not really real. Mm-hmm. And you see that, like, I hope, and, you know, sometimes it's hard to believe this in LA, but that most people do not buy into the garbage that you see on the narrative that you see on social media and the mainstream media. Most people are pretty normal, just want to live their everyday life. That's why I think figures like Joe Rogan and Dave Portnoy, Barstool, like people like that are just like not super political, but just kind of down to earth, relatable. Like most people, I think, fall into that that category.
They do.
And they're not these raging. So I love that Dave Chappelle here is talking to the crowd and he's like, this is real life, you guys. Let's look, we all know all this stuff is happening. I made jokes about it. It triggered the woke people. I set off the alarm bells, hit a nerve.
Yep.
that they're poking holes in their mainstream narrative and they try to keep us on lockdown, our brains on lockdown of how we think. And that didn't make them happy. But we all know that like real life is not what you see on Twitter, what you see on mainstream media.
And I like that point that you make, because you can, as a comedian or as a personality or as somebody who's simply putting out internet content, and you get this onslaught of hate for saying what you say, and all of a sudden you think, oh, I've said something wrong. Because the onslaught can convince you of that, because it's hundreds of people who are all coming at you all at once in this huge mob saying, F you, you fascist, I can't believe you said this, you're transphobic, you're a bigot, you're discriminatory, you're racist, blah, blah, blah. And that can feel like, that pressure can make you feel like, oh, I have done something wrong. There's no way I've done something right if all these people are coming at me. But guess what? It's because those people are typically not normal. They're typically extremist of their ideology coming after you. And because they come at you so aggressively, it makes you feel like everybody feels that way. But the vast majority of people do not feel that way. That's why Dave Chappelle was able to sell out the Hollywood Bowl on Thursday. Yep. It's not because he's controversial and people want to come and bring picket signs to his comedy specials. It's because they agree with him. So mm-hmm. don't let the mob coming after you silence you, because I can guarantee where there's 100 people yelling at you, there's 10,000 people who agree with what you have to say.
Exactly. That's why on Rotten Tomatoes, his special has a 99% positive review from the audience score, and then the critics don't. So the world that the media tries to portray to you, the world that Hollywood tries to portray to you, the world that social media and big tech tries to portray to you is not the real world. And you have, don't be fooled by it. Like Amala's saying, have the courage to live with common sense and speak your mind freely. We need more people to do that, because it's intimidating when all you see on your computer screen and all you see in the media and on movies and on TV and all you hear about is mm-hmm. one central narrative, and you're scared to voice an opinion otherwise. But we need more people to be like Dave Chappelle and say common sense things and laugh at it and not take everything so stinking seriously.
Yeah. Good for you, Dave Chappelle. And like I said, he's the GOAT. He's not really affected by all this. I'm sure he anticipated it. He's gotten nearly every single comedy special that he's put out in the past few years has gotten this same amount of controversy. It's almost like a machine at this point. It's just a pattern. Whatever he says, he's going to get controversy for, and he knows that.
You know, it's a good comedian whenever they piss off the mainstream.
Right. Look at Norm Macdonald, one of the greatest comedians to ever live, and he was one of the least PC comedians to ever hit the stage. And guess what? He made himself uncancelable. And it's people like that who go through and say what they truly think without caring that really do it for us and are really making changes. So good for Dave Chappelle. Now, this next story is out of the Wall Street Journal. Here's the headline. Tesla to move headquarters from California to Texas, Elon Musk says. The electric vehicle maker has long been based in Silicon Valley, but no more. He's not going to be in Silicon Valley anymore.
Sounds like a genius move to me.
It is a genius move, Elon. Now, a lot of people, of course, everybody heard this. Tesla's moving out of California, and they're moving to Texas. This is crazy, crazy, crazy. Of course, the left picks it up and is angry, and then the right picks it up and is like, oh my gosh, he's moving to Texas. Although much of this really isn't political, let's get into the story here. So Tesla Incorporated is moving its headquarters to Austin, Texas, cementing chief executive Elon Musk commitment to the Lone Star State and adding to a handful of Silicon Valley companies that have relocated there. So essentially what he said is he's moving his main presence, his headquarters, from the Silicon Valley over to Austin, Texas, but they are going to remain in California and they are going to continue to grow in California. Now, as far as political notions and narratives go for this, Elon Musk has said that he wants to remain apolitical on these issues when it comes to moving his headquarters, but he did mention that it is far too expensive for the amount of employees that he has to have them move out to Silicon Valley and live there here in California.
Amen. I forgot to put our question, our invitation for questions in the chat. So
okay, yeah, no. Go for it. So I'm gonna read more of this article here. So Elon Musk said last year that he had moved to Texas, whereas rocket company Space Exploration Technologies Corp, or SpaceX, has major operations. He previously likened California to a sports team that had grown complacent after a winning streak. Tesla is following in the footsteps of companies including Hewlett Packard, Enterprise Company, a descendant of what Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard started in Palo Alto, California, and, you know, Oracle Corporation and all that fun stuff. So all these major tech companies and major corporations are moving out of California, and the hubs are really becoming Texas, specifically in Austin and Dallas. Nashville is actually growing vastly with technology, and Southern Florida.
Southern Florida, even Arizona, basically anywhere where they don't lock you down with restrictions on business and tax the heck out of your income and tax the heck out of your company, and make it extremely difficult to do business. And that's essentially why, you know, California is just overregulated, and, you know, good for this company to leave, and good for Elon Musk. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, I am too. And I think, although he says he wants to stay out of politics in regard to this issue, I think politics has a big...
The statement itself says enough. Like, moving itself says a lot.
Right, exactly. It does say a lot. And it says that California is no longer going to be a state where corporations can come and grow to the extent that they've been able to in the past. Why? Because we've ruined the state, essentially, with really bad policies. And people don't want to come and move here. So if you're a large corporation that's constantly hiring new people, outsourcing your work, bringing people from not only from within different states in the United States, but internationally, I think California is not a place that people want to be, especially with how expensive it is to live here under these policies. So the statement alone says enough, and no surprise.
His analogy, too, about how he previously likened California to a sports team that had grown complacent after a win streak. I feel like that's very apt. I think California succeeds a lot despite itself, because there genuinely is a lot of very intelligent people here, a lot of innovators, a lot of brilliant engineers and scientists who are starting businesses and just inventing new technologies. And then you've got the media, and it's a great state and a great hotbed for a lot of talent globally.
It is.
But you can only live off of that so long whenever your government keeps making policies that choke the life out of that innovation. And it's like succeeding despite itself there's a ticking time bomb. And even nationally, it's like, how long can we go on with the policies that we're making nationally, with inflation, with the debt just getting deeper and deeper before it catches up with us? And you can't live off of past success forever. And I wonder, we talk about this all the time, but I wonder how long before California hits rock bottom.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, in virtually every facet of where a society falls, California is falling short when it comes to comparing it to other states. And although we have beautiful weather and you can go to the beach one day and snowboard the next, California is not doing well policy-wise. It's not doing well in terms of how expensive it is to live here. It's not doing well when it comes to crime. It's not doing well when it comes to homelessness. It's not doing well when it comes to the drug problem. And it's not doing well when it comes to mandating people's freedom and liberty. So all of those things and a dozen others that are happening in this state are not looking good for California. And at what point... Because right now, Californians are really living here, specifically in Los Angeles, and they're functioning in a way that I think they acknowledge that these things are happening. In my general conversations with people, they know that this state is getting increasingly more dangerous, increasingly dirtier, just increasingly expensive to live in a dangerous and dirty city. But they're letting it fall by the wayside, and they're letting the amount of bars and the people and the acting opportunities and the music sort of cloud their judgment when it comes to how much worse the state is now.
Yeah.
At what point does that stop, you know?
Who knows, but smart people like Elon Musk are not waiting around to find out.
No, they're not. Yeah, and that's a sign. If you see like some of the smartest people of our generation moving out of California and making that plunge, maybe that's a sign.
But the scary thought for me is, okay, we see this happening in California. What if this happens 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 25, 30, 50, whatever, in America at large, where else is there to go?
Right.
You know, and we used to think, oh, Canada, Australia, you know, Australia went right back to being a prison colony, and Canada's no better. Did you see that tweet from Trudeau today where he used like an alphabet soup term we've never heard
yeah,
before.
Yeah, 2SLGBTQAAAIEIOU. I don't know. But
that's the scary thought for me is what happens when there's nowhere to go?
Yeah, America, regardless of all these problems, America is still the best place to be in the world. Now, that says something. And I think if all the other states start hitting this rock bottom that California is hitting right now, we're just, I don't know, parallel societies are going to start to form, I think. And that's just indicative of what humans do. When things are not going well and a place is not representing your values, you move. And when that place starts to not represent your values, you build smaller communities. And those small communities are going to function parallel to each other. And I think that's where we're headed. I mean, just naturally.
Yeah, I'll head to the parallel red state yeah. community.
Yeah,
for
right,
sure.
right. I'll head over there. Now, speaking of parallels, or maybe not even parallels, these are perpendiculars on this one. Let's talk about the Texas high school gunman. This is a story that happened recently. Now, this is an article out of New York Post. Suspected Texas high school gunman released on bail one day after teacher and students shot. Let's read this article. The Texas student who allegedly opened fire at his high school, injuring four people, including a teacher, was sprung from jail on Thursday afternoon as an attorney who joined him insisted that the case wasn't a standard issue school shooting. What is...
Which is fair.
That?
I mean, but it's just distracting from the fact that this your client attempted to murder three people or however many people and was let out of jail 24 hours later. And I think what she's trying to distinguish is mm-hmm. he's not this mass school shooting. It wasn't like a Columbine type situation where he just showed up to school one day and was trying to murder as many people uh-huh. as possible. He got in a fight and was trying to exact revenge on the people that he got into a fight with. But even so, yeah. it's
Doesn't
you're distracting from the issue at hand, which is how is he getting out on bail after yep. 24 hours committing this shooting?
Yeah, so 18-year-old Timothy George Simpkins, 18, so technically an adult, not a child, of Timberview High School in Arlington, will report to home confinement after he posted $75,000 bond at Tarrant County Jail. I can understand where the argument can be made that this is not a standard issue school shooting. Nonetheless, it was a school shooting. Four people injured in this incident by a young man who decided to bring a gun onto campus. And now he's released after a day and he went home and had a pizza party with his relatives after shooting four people at school. Unbelievable to me. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we pulled up that tweet, but
yes, we're going to get
there. The contrast here between, I'll let you get into it.
Yeah, let's show it. And you tell me if you think this is suspicious at all. Here's the tweet from Americanka. This is two-tiered justice system involved in a self-defense shooting, $2 million bail for Kyle Rittenhouse. Involved in a school shooting, $75,000 bail for Timothy Simpkins.
And if you don't remember the Kyle Rittenhouse situation, he mm-hmm. was, how old is he, like 18, 19?
17, I want to say.
17, so underage, a minor in this case.
Yeah, let me confirm that, but okay. Yeah.
But anyways, he went over to basically be like a, you know, what do you call it, renegade security guard, trying to prevent people from burning buildings down and committing violence at the BLM riots last year
right.
in Minnesota, I believe, and ended up being attacked by the protesters and had to defend himself with his weapon, shot three people. He's 17. He's a minor.
Yep.
He shot three people in self-defense. It's on
yes.
video. It was in self-defense.
Absolutely and in self-defense.
He's been in, is he out on bail now? He had a $2 million bail. I don't know if he got out on bail, but he was in prison. And the incongruence between.
Yeah. Just
getting
the treatment.
Getting out in 24 hours on $75,000 bail after attempting to murder three people in cold blood rather than be in self-defense and then someone else. And I don't know, what's the biggest difference between these two people?
The biggest difference to me is age and race. And that's funny enough to bring it up because people don't ever want to bring it up. And as much as the left makes a claim that the justice system treats black people differently, what happened in this case scenario? Because I see something that was completely motivated by a racial agenda with Kyle Rittenhouse, which is why he got $2 million bail. A 17-year-old in a self-defense gun case got $2 million bail, while this man who actively and premeditatively went to school with a gun to shoot people got $75,000 bail and got to go home the next day.
Yeah, and this is a tired comparison, but just imagine if the races were reversed in this scenario.
Yep.
The media would be losing their minds over the white privilege of being able to get out of prison after attempting to murder three people in 24 hours. They would be losing their minds, and yet they not only are they not reporting on this, but even before his release on bail was reported, this story was buried. The mainstream media was not really elevating this story at all. It was on like the local outlets and stuff, and then conservative outlets were posting on it, but you were not hearing about this.
Yeah, because it's not a standard issue school shooting. And that's why I take issue with that phrasing. You know why they phrased it that way. It's not because he didn't go there to mass murder, because it was a school shooting and he did shoot multiple people. If anybody else had done this, it would have been all over every single mainstream media news outlet if a white person had done this, if Kyle Rittenhouse had gone to school and done this. But no, Timothy Simpkins doesn't get that same treatment. It gets buried by the media. It doesn't get talked about whatsoever. And there's a reason for that. And there's a reason that they say it's not a standard issue school shooting. As far as I'm concerned, he shot people on a school campus. It is a standard issue school shooting. So it's just ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
It is, but another day of media just preferring narrative over facts.
Yes.
And this isn't about a racial thing. It's about school shootings are objectively bad.
Yes.
And trying to attempt to murder people is objectively bad. And being able to walk the streets in 24 hours after attempting to commit attempted murder is unfathomable.
It is unfathomable.
We should be talking about this but we're not, because of race and selective coverage on the media.
Yeah, and you know, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday about this. It was a white guy who was talking to me about how he doesn't feel oppressed for being white or anything like that, and he doesn't feel any problem. He doesn't feel like anybody takes issue with his skin color. And we got into a talk about policing, and you know, immediately he brings up, you know, the Eric Garners, the Philando Castiles, the Michael Browns, the Tamir Rices. And of course, that's what comes to mind, because the media shows that. You know that police brutality is an issue that we should talk about, and it's not an issue that we need to talk about through race. More white people are killed at the hands of a police officer than black people are every single year. Without fail, every single year. And yet you never hear about any of those stories. You never hear about them. And some of them are completely unjustified and are completely a showcase of an untrained police officer. But you never hear that in the media. Why is that? Because it doesn't support the agenda. And if we took out the racial component out of the police brutality conversation and started talking about actual police training and untrained police officers and the bad apples, as the left refers to them, we would have a much better time at reforming our systems and talking about these issues. But because we've made it racialized rather than an issue for all people, regardless of race, regardless of gender, although it does skew male, you know, disproportionately, of course, because we've made it about race, we've alienated ourselves from having that conversation.
Yeah. And speaking of the not reporting on things, the other stories we're not reporting on are the hundreds of children that have been shot in major cities like Chicago, like this year. And why? Because when things don't fit a certain narrative, you underreport and don't draw attention to things that need to be drawn attention to. And we, rather than pushing a narrative that causes us to defund the police and make them less effective at keeping poor communities safe and less effective at protecting the lives of innocent children who are being shot while they're just going about their daily lives in these communities, we are only reporting on instances where we can castigate police officers and make their lives. And we went on this police ride along a few months ago here in LA, in one of the roughest neighborhoods with the LAPD. And they told us our mere presence deters crime, but we're under-resourced and understaffed because no one wants to be a police officer right now because we're so demonized, and then we're underfunded.
Yep.
So we're not able to have the presence that deters crime in these communities. So you get more black victims of shootings. And that is the reprehensible part that is overlooked in all of this.
It is sad. We could purely just take out the racial component to this argument and really talk about the logistical issues when it comes to policing, them being under-resourced, them being under-trained in a lot of cases, and really solve the issue. But no, because that doesn't support an agenda and it doesn't go towards your division. Their goal is to divide and rule, divide and conquer. That's what they want to do. So when you see these things, you should always look at them with a bit of skepticism, because that is their ultimate goal. It's not to fix the logistical problems in our systems whatsoever. And it's not to get us at peace with each other. So that's the sad part. Anyways, guys, we're going to get into some audience questions. So we're going to do audience questions for Fun Friday as well as Would You Rather. Let's get into them. You guys submitted them while we've been talking through these stories today. Our first question is from IB Louie. He asks, what are your goals for the remainder of the year?
Ooh. You're making me answer first?
I'm making you answer first. I am.
I mean, there's only like a month and a half left. No, two and a half months left of the year. Man, you're putting me on the spot. Have you thought about this? I have not thought about this.
I've thought about this in part. Get married. Yeah, I'm single now. I want to get married in the next 3 months. That would be ideal. Two children, at least, boy, girl.
I'm already had a goals year. I got married this year and got engaged at the beginning of this year. Got married in September. So I'm like, did the honeymoon. I'm like figuring out all the like financial stuff. I bought a new car this year.
You've hit all your goals.
Got in a new apartment. So I'm just like, I don't want anything to happen. I want to rest for the rest of the year and you know, just get into a healthy rhythm of life. But I do want to do that with I want to find a church. I want to find good friends through church, get in a rhythm of meeting with a mentor and have healthy patterns in my life, socially. That's kind of the goal. And then doing that as a couple with my wife.
Yeah. Nice. Good answer, Taylor. I'm going to say, the gang has not hung out in a while with Will gone. Sabrina's just had her child. Everybody's all over the place in our friend group. So we need to get the gang back together before the end of the year. Other than that, I've been traveling around now and starting to do speaking engagements, which I never did in this job before. So things have been opening up and now we're doing our different events and going and speaking, which always makes me nervous. Taylor can attest to it and Scott can attest to it. But getting more into a rhythm with that and
So I'm surprised to hear you say this. Uh-huh. You seem to be doing better with the whole I never want to go anywhere if I have to get an airplane thing.
Right. I still hate it.
You still
hate
it.
I've decided to just completely ignore the fact that I have to fly places because it helps me mentally. But now I'm saying that once I'm in those places, my goal is to work on the actual speaking part and getting less nervous about that. Because I do all right, but I'm just nervous. Same thing with flying. I'm nervous.
I roll my eyes when Amla says she's nervous because she's always like, oh my God, I'm shaking like a leaf on a tree. Before she has to do an interview or something. And then she just crushes it every time. And it's like, you're fine.
Thanks,
but
Taylor.
Anyway, sorry.
My coworkers have more faith in myself than I do. Next question here. Left wing horror at PragerU. What can ordinary people do to fight the horror of the American left? I mean, we do it every day on the show.
Yeah.
And
this person's very this is a very graphic term. It's very
Halloween.
Like, hey, where's my
spooky
the horror. The left.
Yeah. You know what? I think in the framing of this question, there's something that we can fix there. I think we need to start having empathy for people. I don't think the left is necessarily a horror, although the things that are happening are not okay. Let's go ahead and place that out there. I think they are horrible, the things that are happening. But as soon as we start to, you know, shift what we think a little bit and have a little bit of empathy for people and why they believe what they believe, the conversations become so much easier. And I always make the joke of, oh, I go in red pill men at bars. But I want to tell this story because this is really important. And it's about the way that you approach it. You have to approach it with empathy and an understanding of why people believe the things that they believe. I went to a bar a couple weeks ago, one that I frequent out here in L.A., this guy comes up, he's talking to me, and we start talking about politics. I tell him what I do. I work at PragerU. I do a show every day. And we start talking politics back and forth. Of course, he's got his leftist views, the pro-choice, the race relations issues. And I start giving him my perspective and asking him questions about his perspective and saying, well, if you think this, well, why wouldn't this solution be correct? Or why is it that you think that I'm a victim? And he actually had to question the things that he believed. And I got a text this morning from this man saying, I watched your video on Dave Chappelle and the whole comedy special that you put on Instagram this morning, and I can't believe how much I agree with you. And he put a little crying emoji, like, I can't believe I agree with a conservative.
It pains me to admit that you're changing my mind.
Right. But that was somebody who probably would have never thought about that before and would have approached that from a leftist perspective. But because I talked to him and had empathy for what he believed, because I was like that too, he completely said, you know, I cannot believe how much I agree with you. So that's one mind changed just this morning.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why I think I balked a little bit about the framing of the horror of the left, because if that's your mentality and the words that you're using going into an interaction with someone who disagrees with you,
right,
then you're most likely going to have a combative tone, and it's not going to be productive in terms of changing their mind. So, but the way, if you are concerned with what the things that the left is trying to redefine, and the things that they're pushing that you feel are a threat to everything we know and cherish and love in America, then what you need to do is really educate yourself on what are those values that you want to defend. I think that's a problem that conservatives have so often, is we know intuitively the things that we cherish, but we don't have the ability to articulate what it is that we really do believe in, and what are the ideals that we strive for, and why is freedom important in the first place. I heard someone say the other day, it's not that the problem we have today is not that people don't even, it's not even that people don't know the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or have basic patriotism, is that they don't know why freedom is even important or unique or different from anything else in history in the first place. So really lean into the values, educate yourself, and develop a deep appreciation for the values that America's founded on and what this country stands for, and learn to articulate those. And then when you have interactions with people, learn to be persuasive by, like Amla saying, having empathy, asking thoughtful questions, making them engage their brain and think by asking them questions rather than just trying to preach at them and tell them how horrible they are.
Yep, exactly right. Now, this next question is from Brielle Andela. She asks, how can I survive this clown world without getting exhausted? Do you have any advice for people in Australia? I'm not locked down hard. Australian isn't a monolith anymore than America.
So at least you can don't have to send a government a selfie every 5 minutes.
Right.
Will and Amla Live is a great way to keep in tune with what's going on, be equipped for living in the modern time without losing your mind. Hopefully we try to take a tone here that's hopeful and, restores your hope for humanity, but also doesn't deny or ignore how crazy the world is right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm also a shameless plug here, but
yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I'm going to give a sort of a tough love answer. These are hard times, and hard times create exhaustion, and it's something that we have to power through, and it's something that we have to fight through, specifically in cases like Australia. And you have to think about it through this lens. If I don't do something now, this could be lost forever. And Dennis gives a speech about this, and it's something that he's recently added to his talking points. And a lot of people ask him, well, Dennis, do you have hope? And I've talked about this on the show because I love everything that Dennis has to say, but this one particularly struck me. And he said, you know what? I'm not an optimist and I'm not a pessimist. The pessimist thinks that things are going to get worse, so he does nothing. The optimist thinks that things are going to get better, so he does nothing. And to ask me about hope, does it truly matter if I have hope? I have my values, I have my morals, I know what's good and I know what's evil, and I'm going to continue to fight for what's good. And right now in Australia, there's a harder call than ever to continue to fight for what's good. And fighting is exhausting. It is exhausting. It drives you crazy. It does make you tired. But you have to continue to do it, because you run the risk of losing a life that's even worth being in. So go through the exhaustion for now, and it will pay off later, and you will feel so good at the end of the day, at the end of your life, at the end of all this time, you will feel great about what you've done. So you got to power through the exhaustion. That's my answer.
That's good advice.
Let's see. Next question here from Jane Donut. Should I speak up about the indoctrination in my California public school? I am in seventh grade, and we just had to break down an extremely biased CNN article yesterday.
This breaks my heart.
It does break my heart.
Seventh grader. I can't imagine having to deal with this
stuff
as a seventh grader right now. But kudos to you, Jane Donut, whatever your real name is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yes, I would say speak up as much as you can. I mean, you know, we tell people this all the time, but like, you have to do the math. We don't know all the details of your situation and what the costs and benefits are, how much you can say or whatever. But, I like what Amla says. Don't assume that this is a time for courage, and you can't assume that, if you don't say anything, that anyone else will. And, it's a time where you got to be brave and voice a different opinion and challenge the status quo. And so generally, I would say yes.
Right. I would say speak up. And also, I hope you're talking to your parents about this. And I hope they're well in tune to what's happening at your school as well, because they have a lot of pull. And you have school board meetings that you can go to, your parents can go to, and they can talk to them. They can talk to your teachers. They can talk to your administrators, as can you. So that would be something that I would do as well. Just, again, I think we talked about this on a previous show where somebody was having trouble at their school as well. Identify what the source of the problem is. Who at the highest level knows about this? Is it just your teacher? Is it the administrators? Is it the principal? Is it your school board that knows about this? And you go up to that highest point and you start talking to those people and hope that it sort of trickles down. But do talk to everybody and speak up and say something. But first and foremost, make sure your parents know what's going down and they have something to do about it as well.
Yes. And hope to God that I hope that they back you up.
Let's see here. Okay. Oh, what is this? Okay, here's a question. This one's interesting. What kind of people do you hate the most? People who walk while on escalators?
Okay, so now we're into like, this was one of the would you rather questions.
Okay, this is one of the would you rathers. Okay. What kind of people do you hate the most? People who walk while on escalators? People who bite into their ice cream? People who put pineapple on pizza? People who speed up just to walk slowly in front of you? People who say you have to read the book to love the movie? Or people who treat you like a kid constantly, that constantly needs help all the time?
Okay. I know this one for sure. Scott, you should join in on this one.
Scott, you should.
I got your mic on.
My strategy is to figure out which one affects me the most, just personally.
Mine is definitely people who speed up to walk in front of you slowly. I am a fast walker, and I'm not a fast driver like recklessly, but I'm an efficient driver, and nothing irks me more than being stuck behind slow people. I just can't take it. So that's my thing. I do not care if you bite into ice cream or
those don't affect me. That's your thing.
But if you're slowing me down,
yeah. I think I'm going to go people who treat you like a kid who constantly needs help all the time. I hate that. When I meet somebody and, you know, you say, oh, I'm 21 or like, you know, and they just completely immediately they've written you off. It's just like, oh, she's super unintelligent. And they talk to you as if you don't know anything. Oh, my goodness. Does that get on my nerves?
Well, I feel like everyone who hears you talk is always blown away by how smart you are. So I feel like you never experienced that.
There's still the people who give me like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, do you understand? Oh, my gosh.
Like pat you on the head.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's worse. I think that's worse than somebody walking slow in front of me.
Just got to have thick skin. You're smarter than them. You don't need to worry about
it. I know. I don't worry. It doesn't keep me up at night, you know? But in the moment, I'm like, I don't want to be having this conversation right now, but I'm having this conversation.
They're just setting you up to school them anyways.
It's true. That's true.
Boom.
It's true.
Yeah. I view the who speeds up.
This is Hot Scott, by the way.
Walk slowly in front of you. That's infuriating. So I would agree with you, Taylor, on that one. I mean, it's just like somebody cutting you off on the road and then slowing down as you're going up a hill. It's like, hey, you're supposed to accelerate. What are you doing? and then the first one, whatever that one was, I actually want to like chase people who walk up the escalator and shake their hand because I respect that.
I do that all the time.
That's like, cool. Hey,
yeah, they're moving. That's good. They're scooting.
My rule for driving is I do not care if you pull out in front of me as long as you don't make me slow down.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I literally don't care. Go for it. But anyways.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Now we're into would you rather.
Yeah. Sorry. That was like a rough transition. We had like a super serious question from a seventh grader.
I know.
The next slide was that random comment.
Yeah.
Question,
it was like,
we planned a comedic segment to end the show today. So now we're going to do would you rather. Yeah.
Would you rather? Where's the sound? Oops. Where's the sound? Oh, wait, that's pretty good.
There we go.
Okay. Good, good, good. Now, this one, first one. Would you rather be stranded in Jurassic Park or Jumanji?
All right. Scott.
I know my answer. Scott?
I'd have to say Jurassic Park because at least there were vehicles, there were, you know, some bunkers you could jump into. Jumanji, you are literally in the elements and you're going to get eaten by an enormous snake, something like that.
No.
So yeah, I'm Jurassic Park all the way.
Okay. Okay. First of all, are we talking about the original Jumanji? Mm-hmm. Because we should be talking about the original Jumanji. I'm not talking about this Kevin Hart, Dwayne The Rock Johnson stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I didn't
but
see those either.
That one doesn't sound scary at all.
Okay.
You're speaking to older generation.
Okay. So yeah.
The Robin Williams one.
Yes. We should be talking about the Robin Williams one. 100% Jumanji over Jurassic Park. Because first of all, Jumanji is like, it's ever changing. Jurassic Park is just like, you are fighting these beasts that are going to kill you. If you're anywhere near them, they're probably going to kill you. Like, you're going to die. There's no way out. It's not like you can just, you know, outsmart this system. I think the scariest thing in Jumanji, as I recall, was the little vine thing that was killing, was trying to grab, it didn't even kill anybody. Look, nobody died in Jumanji, first of all, that I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the little vines that were grabbing them was probably the scariest thing that happened in Jumanji.
What year is it again? I can't remember. Thank you. Okay. No, I would rather do Jumanji 100%.
100%.
Yeah.
Remember the old hunter guy with the shotgun? He was like 70 years old trying to kill them. I'm like, Wait, dude.
No, I think I'd rather do Jurassic Park.
Why?
You can like hole up in a bunker and hide like they did in Jurassic Park. But the Jumanji, you've got all these...
You can hide in Jumanji.
Pestilences and crazy things happening. You have a guy hunting you, trying to kill you. You turn into a monkey.
He was like an old man.
You have a stampede of wild animals. Like, I don't want to deal with any of that. And then it's just so, like, unpredictable and, yeah, no.
Yeah, there's an infrastructure in Jurassic Park.
There's infrastructure.
Yeah, in weapons,
Jurassic Park is infrastructure.
Yeah.
Abortion is infrastructure.
All right,
that's an old reference. That's an old reference. Next one. Would you rather you're stuck in a grocery store until you can eat every single thing on the shelves? How long until you're free? Question mark. Wait, that's not really would you rather.
I know. It's just a crazy answer the internet questions.
Okay, okay. You're stuck in a grocery store until you can eat every single thing on the shelves. How long until you're free? A few years.
A few years? Through one grocery store?
Well, how big is the grocery store? Are we talking like...
Trader Joe's?
Like a Trader Joe's.
Costco.
Not Costco. Costco, you would die in there.
Yeah, Costco, you'd be dead.
Or live forever.
This is assuming that things don't expire. So I would say like 3 months.
No way. You have to think about the pasta, the rice.
The dairy.
Scott would be dead.
If it goes...
You can't have gluten.
You can't have gluten, so he would die. Do you have to eat spoiled things?
Oh, I don't know. Okay. We said nothing spoils
okay.
in this scenario.
You have to think about all the different cans of soup in a grocery store. The rices, the bags of, literal 20-pound bags
so
of rice.
Carbs. This would be so miserable.
They have...
This is like hell.
The entire produce section, all the frozen foods, which are like frozen meals, frozen pizzas that...
You have to eat all the toothpaste.
You have to eat all the toothpaste. She's like,
drink
like,
all
that's
the mouthwash.
Just a normal Friday. That's just a normal Friday for Taylor. No, there's so much food
in
the grocery store.
Yeah, okay, maybe like a year.
More than a year. You're there.
Yeah, more than a year.
I'm there for like 4 years, 100%. 4 years. Yeah.
Goodness.
I don't think you're taking into account how much food.
I've been to restaurants with you. You order like 4 entrees every restaurant.
Massive, massive meals.
I like how you're both confirming this. No, I just coincidentally, I order what looks good on the menu and it turns out being massive and then they have to help me eat it, but...
I know. We're like, I'll have a burger, I'll have a chicken sandwich. Amla's like, give me the steak and lobster, and then I'll have a calamari for the appetizer.
You are so, that is so false. Next one. Would you rather start every conversation or have every conversation started by someone else? I would rather start every conversation. Then you can control who you talk to.
Yeah. I don't want people to start conversations with me.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I'd rather have that power.
Yeah.
All right, that's an easy one.
Right now, as you function as of today, are you starting most of the conversations you have or are other people starting most of the conversations you have? This is an interesting thing to think about.
I probably start them. I keep a pretty
low
profile.
I think I do too.
I would agree with both of you. You both start them.
You're a responder.
Yeah, I'm a responder at this point, but it's also like I choose, you know, sometimes I choose not to start them, but somebody else starts them and I'm not going to just give them the cold shoulder.
Right. I'm definitely an extroverted and I start conversations. Taylor's like low-key and people, and he starts conversations, but he's much more introverted about it.
No.
Okay, next one. Would you rather be blind or trapped in an Olive Garden for the rest of your life?
This
I couldn't
is hard.
Even get through
this
it without.
This is so hard.
Would you rather be blind or trapped in an Olive Garden for the rest of your life?
this is like both horrible things. I think I'd have to go Olive Garden though. Just
you're trapped in it for the rest of your life.
What good is being able to go anywhere you
but
want
what
if
good,
you can never see?
What good is being able to see if all you can see is Olive Garden?
Unlimited pasta and breadsticks. Oh man, I don't know. There's neither one, but like the idea of never
see.
Like, at least if you can see, you can like read books and get on the internet
Who
and watch
said
movies.
There's no books in the Olive Garden, and you're trapped in it.
There's Wi-Fi in the Olive Garden for the staff, and if I had to stay there my whole life, I'm sure I could get the password off of somebody, and then I would watch movies and read books and educate myself.
I don't know if we know anything about the sensory deprivation sort of movies that have been coming out and shows. It seems like blind people may be able to see in colors, you know, maybe it's just right. a whole different perspective on life.
Yeah, do you take a flyer on like technology curing blindness and sometimes?
Yeah. Do you have to eat only Olive Garden food? It's a logistics question. I'm assuming yes.
I don't know.
And in that case, you're just blind me. In that case, I'm Oedipus. I'm going to blind myself. I'm going to blind myself.
Oh my gosh.
Next one. Would you rather be stuck behind a midget that's always walking? You're not supposed to say it's supposed to be.
Sorry, this is from the internet. We didn't write this.
Be stuck behind a small person that's always walking slightly slower than whatever speed you're walking at, or have to wear a rollerblade on one foot all the time. Oh my gosh. It's always just slightly.
You heard my answer to that question earlier. Yeah, it's right. Rollerblade for sure. I do not want to be behind, regardless of the height or disabilities or whatever of a person. I do not want to be behind someone slow. So yeah, I'll take my chances with the rollerblade.
On one foot the rest of your life, all the time. So that means when you go to bed, you have a rollerblade on one foot.
Well, yeah, I'd have a person slow in front of me the rest of my life, always.
At your wedding, you'd have a rollerblade.
I already had my wedding. So.
Wait, can you switch the rollerblade?
I don't know.
Like, you just have to have one.
It has to be on one foot.
You'd probably get really good at skating on one foot, too.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I agree with you. I'll take her. That's a party trick, baby.
I love talking Amelie into things. All right.
That's a party trick. Next one. Would you rather work in a terrible job with awesome people or an awesome job with terrible people?
It's all about the people.
Well, I work in a great job with terrible people already.
So. Yeah, we're horrible. Yeah, we get awesome job with awesome people. I got to think about like...
My honest answer to this is I would rather work an awesome job with terrible people.
I don't need
my social life to be fulfilled by the people I work with. If I have a great job and believe in what I'm doing, that's more fulfilling to me. And I can deal. I already worked at a Hollywood marketing agency the people I worked closely with were great, but there was plenty of other people that were not great.
Right.
Whatever.
But you liked your job.
It's work. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Scott, you said terrible job, awesome people. So like sewage cleanup, but the coworkers are awesome, bro.
Yeah, I mean that would be a better scenario. But now Taylor's convincing me the other way. yeah, because at the end of the day, it's you know what you're doing. Like, are you living a fulfilling life yourself? And you don't need other people necessarily at your job or at your work to fulfill that.
I think so. I agree. You know, you got your wife, you got your kids, you got your friends outside of work. I think I'm gonna go terrible job. I mean, awesome job, terrible people. Yeah.
Cash
Next,
money.
Big brain Taylor. Would you rather die in 5 years or in 5,000 years? 5,000, of course. Easy. 100%. Yeah. 5,000. 5,000.
I don't know. I would love to meet the Lord, and I don't know if I want to wait 5,000 years.
Okay.
But, yeah. And plus, like, with the way the world's going, do I really want to be around for that? Just kidding. I don't know. That's a tough one.
5,000. I'm not dying at 26, hopefully. Hopefully. Now that I've said it. Oh, gosh. Don't put me in the 27 club, ladies and gentlemen. 5,000 years, 100%.
Yeah, I'd go 5,000 as well. I mean, because I would love to travel the world and see everything.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure 5,000 years would give me the time.
Oh, I think it would give you, you would see the world like 1,000 times over in 5,000 years. It always reminds me of like that movie Age of Adeline. Have you seen that movie?
No.
I've
seen Pirates of the Caribbean, though.
Caribbean or Caribbean?
Caribbean. It's Caribbean.
It's only
sea.
Caribbean in every
But
other
you know
context.
How like the sailors are condemned to like not being able to die.
Right.
And they want to just be free from life. I feel like after 3,500 years, you'd be like, all right, I'm over this.
Oh, I think you'd get there probably after. You'd probably get there
after
300.
Like 120. Also, like, are you 5,000 years old? Because I don't want to live in like a 100-year-old's body my whole life, you know?
I don't know what type of body that you're in.
I'm thinking way too seriously about this.
No, you have to think about the logistics. I'm assuming you're in this body. I'm going to say 5,000 years, but I understand that both are super depressing and horrible. Like in Age of Adeline, you watch everybody that you ever love live and die over and over and over again. Like imagine if you just keep getting remarried and they live and they die and they live and they die and they live and they die and everything that you own, you know?
Taylor, it's more like the Dúnedain, you know?
The Dúnedain?
Yeah, Dúnedain. Yeah. Like...
It's a Red Lord of the Rings reference. More like an elf, really.
Yeah, true.
Next one. Would you rather be rich and famous or rich and not famous.
Rich and not famous, for sure.
Mm.
Amala, you're already rich and famous. So
I'm not rich by any means, by any means. And I'm only, as far as fame goes, I'm like an F-list celebrity. I'm like an F. That's where I'm at right now. Rich and famous, I think.
Wow.
I think. Just because when you get famous, you get connections with people that you probably would not have connections with before if you were like just rich. And that's cool. And you get to meet people and, you know, network and build connections and with people you probably never would have met otherwise. So I think, there's horrible sides to it too.
If you're extremely rich, right? But not to, in a different way.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Like when you're rich and famous, you're typically famous for like something. When you're just rich, like the people that I meet who are just like exorbitantly rich, mm-hmm. they are so disconnected from.
I think it's fresh in my mind. From life. I just watched that Britney Spears documentary with my wife the other day, and you see the effect of like fame on your psyche for a long period of time. I watched the Michael Jackson documentary too, and like if you never have the opportunity to be like socialized like a normal human being, or whatever, you can't like So I don't know. I think that's like extreme fame.
It is,
but It's a totally different, lonely, existence that I think looks pretty miserable, that a lot of people would wish their way out of if they could.
Yeah.
So I think it's all in degrees, too. It's interesting.
Scott?
Yeah, rich and not famous, 100%, because I think...
Valid?
This is obviously coming from a very not famous person, but I feel like when you do get to that level, like Taylor was saying, the relationships you may gain in the future might not be those true rich relationships that you could get as just a run-of-the-mill Joe.
Very valid. Very valid. Mm. I think the rich part has so much more to do with it than the famous part does. Next, would you rather fight an alien, a zombie, a vampire, or a werewolf?
This is a Halloween one.
Zombie. 100%.
Yeah, 100% a zombie.
100% a zombie.
Unless it was like 28 days later zombie.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, those are like super fast, super vicious.
That's scary.
Yeah, you got zero chance.
Yeah, if it's like Walking Dead zombie, then it's like, what? You're going to like slowly come after me and you're already...
You could probably
like
kill
a
zombie with...
You don't want no vampire because you got to get like the wood stake or the
They're super quick.
Whatever,
they have super strength.
Werewolf, heck no.
Yeah,
and then alien is just a wild card. You don't know. It could be like a little Toy Story alien that's like this big. And
No. You know, like the aliens are far more advanced than we are. Yeah. You know they are. If they exist, they're far more advanced than we are. Vampire, they're super speed. They're super strength. They dazzle in the sunlight. Can't mess with that. Werewolves, no.
No.
Zombie, I could probably beat a zombie up with a baseball bat.
Exactly.
And that's my best bet.
Team
Next.
Zombie.
Would you rather permanently have one eye, ear, and nostril closed, or always verbally say every thought you have in your mind? Oh my gosh.
But it's easy for me.
Verbally say every thought you have in your mind. 100%.
Sure. Yeah.
100. Lots of trouble? 100%.
Oh, yeah. Anyone disagree?
Nope,
not
at all.
I hate being stuffed up. Like, yeah. Just the nostril alone. I'd be like, I'll say everything just for the nostril. Yeah. Much less the eye.
Having water in your ears is annoying too. So if you have that.
You just be like, oh, he has Tourette's. I'm so sorry. Essentially, at that point, you do.
And I don't think anything that bad anyways.
No.
So.
Well, I do, but no. Well, good for you, Taylor, but I.
I mean, I'm not like a serial killer or a pervert, so,
Yeah, but you have to think everything that you ever think. Like, if you walk past somebody,
like,
and you're
impolite.
Like, you're attractive.
Yeah. That'd be awkward.
You'd be like, that guy's so
awkward.
Hot. It would be very awkward.
Okay, I wouldn't say that, but anyways.
You'd be like, why are you staring at me when people are, like, staring at you?
Like, Hot Scott's looking so hot today.
Yeah, right. Next one. Would you rather understand everyone or have everyone understand you? Understand everyone.
I like this one.
Easy.
Yeah, understand everyone.
Yep.
I'd agree.
That one's simple.
Yeah,
as much as I wish that everyone could just understand my deepest feelings and how smart I am.
Yeah.
You can use the knowledge of understanding everyone else. You can use that so well to like convince people or to change minds. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. You could so change the world if you understood everybody.
I'm emotionally fulfilled independent of needing to be understood by
exactly.
people.
Exactly.
I get that from Jesus and my wife. So.
Yes. Everybody's misunderstood. And Scott, of course. Next one. Would you rather always feel like sneezing but never sneeze, or always feel like vomiting but never vomit? Sneezing. 100%. Yeah, sneezing.
Yeah.
You know, feeling like you have to vomit is the worst.
That's the worst sickness that you... Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
Just,
sneezing.
You just start salivating.
Just thinking about it. Next one. Would you rather feel full but have to force yourself to eat in order to survive, or always feel hungry but never have to eat again? Always feel hungry, never have to eat again. We discussed this.
Yeah, we talked about it right before the podcast. I would agree.
Feeling full is
trying to force
worst.
Yourself to eat when you're full is like the worst. Like I went through a bulking season SDN a few years ago and didn't like put on like 18 pounds in a couple of months and or in a month or in 6 weeks or something.
Right.
Anyways, it's miserable. Like when you're like trying to force yourself to eat, it just makes me want to puke and it, you know, you just feel like heavy walking around and having to do that every day just to survive? No.
Yeah, no, I'd rather feel hungry, even though that feeling is pretty horrible too. And it depends on how much, what they mean by feeling hungry. Do they mean like the average hunger or you feel starved?
Yeah, no, I'm going to cut against the grain here and I'm going to say I would choose the feel full.
Really?
I have to force myself to eat. I mean, I felt like I had to do that for 4 straight years.
Oh, that is true.
Playing football.
That is true.
And I got used to it and you can combat it with staying hyperactive and try and satiate it. But I guess it
hot
says
takes.
Feeling full.
It's a hot take. Good answer, Scott. Okay. Wait, is this the same one? Yes, it's the same one. Would you rather have a 1 minute conversation with your past self or your future self?
Gosh.
Definitely not my past self.
Well, your past self, you can like warn against certain things or give some advice. Yes.
Because then you may not
but
be
then
the
you
same
wouldn't be
person
your future.
Speaking.
This is the grandfather paradox, guys. Yeah. We can't get into this. We cannot go down the loophole of whether or not the grandfather paradox is real or not. Let's assume that you can warn them while still being you in the future. Let's assume.
It's just like you can tell them how to cut a corner.
So yeah. Let's assume that you can tell them, like skip this step. Yeah. Skip
don't this move step, to baby California. Girl.
right. I would go to my 6-month-year-olds.
I would probably talk to my future self and see what I could learn from myself.
Yeah, because then you have your future self telling you how to cut corners now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's weird.
Future self.
I think future self. But what if your future self, what if you're like homeless or something? What if that's your future self?
Then
maybe they can warn you out of it.
Change it. Yeah.
Future self.
Scare you straight.
Future self. Okay. Are we? Oh, yeah, we're done. That's it.
All right.
I didn't realize how many that we had. Guys, thank you
guys. It
felt
like a lot, but we went through them pretty quick.
We did. We did a good job. Hopefully you guys agreed with most of our comments. Drop your answers to the Would You Rather questions down below after we end the stream. I'd love to know where you guys land on this.
Yeah, if you have funny questions that you drop in the comments, we will use them on a future show.
So yes.
This stems from this Barstool game that they play called Answer the Internet, and they just have people make up these crazy questions and ask. So if you have any funny ones, do send them.
Yeah, get yourself featured on our show. We will shout out your usernames as they come about with the questions. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That is 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. You can listen to us rather than watch us by going to Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and leaving us a 5-star review to let people know that you love the show, to let us know that you love the show. Just leave us a little 5-star. It is that simple.
We have lots of reviews on Apple right now, by the way, and I've been reading them, and they're great. So thank you guys for going on there, but please keep them coming. It helps us with search rank, and more people will discover the show, and it's a great way, simple, easy way that you can show your support for the show is by liking, commenting, and subscribing, but leaving reviews on Apple and Spotify really helps us out too.
Exactly. And if you would like to get a text message sent to your phone to let you know when we're live, you can text live to 41776. That is live to 41776 to get a text message sent to your phone letting you know that we are live. We are going to be back on Monday, but next week is going to be an interesting week. The podcast is moving, guys.
Yes, it is. We're moving to a new office studio, and so we may be down for a couple of days, but we will still do our best to deliver you content as much as we can, as regularly as we can. I think we'll be able to do it Thursday, Friday still, but bear with us if it looks different behind us or anything like that.
We will keep you posted. We're getting upgraded, ladies and gentlemen. There's going to be a little rocky road to the finish line, but we are getting upgraded on Will and Amala Live. So thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you Monday. Woo, woo, woo. Bye, guys.